My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Hello!
My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Stop saying that!
Welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types about politics and such. It is Saturday, February 6, 2016, and we just watched the GOP debate, the last one before the New Hampshire primary. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Dana.
And we were addressed, our age group, more or less, was addressed specifically, sort of, by this right-wing hack lady who, Susie Ham Sandwich or whatever her name was.
God, she's awful.
Yeah, who made some bogus claims, but we'll get to her. This debate started out interesting and fun, and then it ground to a halt and got really lame.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It was very raucous for a very short period of time, and then
it was actually fun. I was actually enjoying watching a Republican debate, not because of the what they were talking about.
No,
you know,
not
the policy.
Substance. No, of course.
But just because it was a good back and forth, and Marco Rubio short circuited, and smoke was coming out of his ears.
It was amazing. Yeah,
there are a lot of really awesome instances in which he just. His circuits were showing.
Well, let's go back before that, because the whole thing got off to a weird clusterfuck start when they were announcing the candidates.
Oh, God.
This is my favorite.
It's amazing.
Oh, my God.
Ben Carson either was not paying attention or didn't hear his name or something got screwed up. So, you know, they announced it like a football game, which I don't know if they usually do that, because we don't usually see that part.
Yeah.
But they showed it on ABC with the candidates, like, coming out of the green room.
Yeah.
And they're like, and Ben Carson! And then Ben Carson walks out, and then he stays,
kinda
like, in the hallway.
Stops.
Yeah.
Just, like, looking around.
Yeah. Look completely, like,
oblivious.
Alien, anonymous, like, what am I doing?
Yeah,
what's going on, guys?
Stage manager comes out and
waving
him on, and he's like, no,
even
like, giving him the choke signal.
Even the stagehand came out and was like, go, Carson, and Carson
called,
said no, and he's like, all
right. Right, and then they, like, called Cruz out, and Cruz, like, walks by him and looks at him like, what the fuck's going on?
Right,
and then
Trump
comes
came
out.
And then refused to walk out until Ben Carson had come out, and I'm wondering if that was because of pride, because I'm not going to walk out until you've gone out, because I'm supposed to come out last.
It was amazing, because then everyone else walked out, and they show the stage, and there's two empty podiums on, like, opposite weird corners things, and then they're like, all right, so Ben Carson, please come out. And he's like,
Donald Trump,
oh,
like, pats him on the back, like it's okay,
ahead,
little buddy. You go on ahead.
Yeah, he's
go
like,
ahead.
Yeah, he's like, he makes that face, like, yeah, it's all right, you
it's
can
okay,
go.
You go.
Now it's time.
And then they're like, and Donald Trump, and Trump doesn't come out, and then they're like, and finally, we are introducing Donald Trump. And he's like, yes, now
like,
I'll walk out.
He refused to be like an and Donald Trump.
It,
like,
yes.
It was beneath him.
It
to
was
walk
like
out.
An it was like an SNL skit.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
SNL couldn't have done it better.
It was amazing.
I'm actually really interested to see what they'll do, if they'll try to do a version of that skit tonight, or if they didn't have enough time.
They don't have enough time. They
can't do it next week because the primaries are over and whatever. But yeah, no, it was amazingly shit showishly.
Anna would love it.
Anna would love the
it
awkwardness
was
of it.
Horribly awkward, and I don't know if because some of the candidates said they couldn't hear themselves, which seems weird.
Well,
but the other ones
I
could.
That was super cute the way that they tried to give them cover and say like, oh, I know it was hard to hear because the applause was so
well. Then
high.
Carson said, oh, I was supposed to go second, so I was confused, but whatever. Anyway, so when that got sorted out.
That goes without saying. I was confused Ben Carson.
When that got sorted out, they went, I guess I'll let you take over now. They, Rach.
So they asked Trump. Cruz had made some statements earlier in the week about him, Trump, not having the temperament to be the president. so he was sort of asked to respond to that, and he said, you know, I would like to note, like, all night long, Donald Trump spoke like Donald Trump, but in a way that was, like, even more Trumpy.
Trumpy?
Like, yes. He literally just spoke. There was some article that said he speaks at what some linguists said was about a fourth grade reading level.
Yeah.
And it was so apparent tonight. Like, I have it like five times in my notes when you're like, oh, he just used four words five times and didn't say anything. He basically said,
speaks at a fourth grade reading
level. I'm a winner. I get along with people. I've built massive corporations. And then he went back to, you know, I'm the person who hit Mexican first, and I'm the person who says Muslims are a problem and blah, blah, blah. And no one else wanted to get on board. Then they did. I'm not the one with the trigger. Everyone else is. So the question was
specifically, everyone said, you're not the person who has the right temperament to have your finger on the button.
Oh, right, because he's going
to
nuke Denmark.
Because you could even nuke Denmark, exactly. And he said, and I'm not the one that you need to worry about with my trigger on the finger, or finger on the trigger.
He could have said that, too.
Either one.
He's like, and then he goes, we need something because something is going on. And you're like, and that's his life. That's his big closer.
Trump good, Cruz bad. Yeah, like, vote Trump.
We need something because something is going on. Like,
you know,
all
we're
right.
gonna need something because something's
going on. That's what I want to say. I'm
classic.
A winner. And you're like, all right, great.
Yeah.
So then they go to Cruz.
About the Ben Carson controversy.
Not yet. Okay. This was about sort of. Him being able to respond, and he was like, Obama, blah, can't say the name of ISIS terrorists.
Right, right. Rubio. This isn't Cruz.
This was Cruz.
This is Cruz.
Oh, Cruz said that?
Cruz always is hitting him on the, like, he never
won't call it Islamic terrorism
whatever. Or Islamic extremism.
I thought that was all Rubio.
And then he named Bernie.
For the first time.
He's like, it can't be Hillary, and it can't be Bernie Sanders, and it shouldn't be Donald Trump. Military, blah, keep America safe, does Trump have the temperament? So Martha Raddatz kind of came back and said, the question, sir, was whether or not Donald Trump has the temperament. And he basically said, the voters will decide.
Well, the importance behind that being that he specifically said in that publication, Trump does not have the temperament. And then on the debate stage said, would you back up those remarks or do you have anything to say? And he's like, well, I guess the voters would decide. So Cruz, in typical Cruz fashion, just weaseled out of answering the actual question.
Right, which Trump called him on and said, like, he's not answering the question, which is typical of politicians, and I won't do that, and we'll win with Trump.
This was actually a particularly hilarious part or opening where we knew that this was going to be kind of a fun one, is because he started saying, you know, when we start looking at D.C. politicians, they come out with these
statements. You're thinking of Christie later.
I'm saying Christie built on this later in a much more fantastic way.
Yes, okay.
But he did say, you know, like, that wasn't actually answering the question. That's what you come to expect from the D.C. politicians.
Right, exactly.
Much more on that in a minute,
because, man, it got fun.
So good.
Okay, so then they had to do Carson v. Cruz, right? So the controversy in Iowa after the caucuses that's been coming out lately is that, as Travis talked about in the last podcast, Ben Carson said something kind of in the middle of the caucuses that said, I'm going home to change my clothes for 18 days. And Ted Cruz's campaign came out and said, basically, to the precinct captains, Ben Carson
say
is Carson's dropping
out in the caucus for us, basically.
Yeah, and Cruz denied it for a while, and then Carson came out with an actual audio tape of one of Cruz's staffers saying out loud to the precinct captains that he is dropping out of the race and to encourage his voters to support Ted Cruz. Cruz apologized, and so they had a little back and forth on that. I was really hoping that Carson was going to be a little bit animated, have a little fire in his belly, sort of get excited or get pissed or do something of any sort of seething.
He did exactly what I predicted.
Yeah, he did. Dana predicted that he would do very nothing, and he did.
Yeah.
He said, it's the 105th anniversary of Reagan. No. It's the birthday of Reagan.
He said both things.
And I won't. Yeah, that's.
Well,
that, a quote.
This is a quote.
That's a quote.
He said both of those things.
Yeah. And then he's like, no birthday, I guess, of Reagan. And I won't use this to speak ill of Ted Cruz, because that makes sense. Because
St. Reagan?
Yeah. And he felt bad that Cruz's team thought so little of him, and that he thought that his supporters were treated badly. And then he was like, one of them died. And we were like, what is this? One of his supporters died in fighting for his thing. What happened, Dana? You looked it up.
So it is true. One of his staffers a couple weeks ago was in a car
accident.
It
wasn't on caucus night, though.
No. It wasn't in support of Ben Carson's cause or anything. It was just a staffer who was dealing with volunteers who was involved in a car accident moving from one state to the next.
Right, right.
He didn't, like, die.
Which is awful.
You didn't get trampled by supporters?
Carson made it sound like some, you know, people died in the effort to get me the Iowa caucus, and right. Your people didn't. It was like, what
That's
the fuck
That's not to
happened?
Minimize this person's death.
Not at all, but...
It is kind of, in my mind, cheapen this dude's death to bring it up as a political talking
point.
I thought it was kind of sleazy.
Right, and then he brought up a good point, which we've talked about previously, which was, did Cruz do anything illegal? No. And Carson said, basically... That's true. He didn't do anything illegal. Those are what I call Washington ethics, which is if it's not illegal, do what you have to do to win. And those aren't my ethics. And I mean,
yeah, it was a decent line, but it wasn't.
But it was
fire
delivered in a way of, you know, those are Washington ethics. I don't believe in the just very
very
alien,
Ben Carson like.
Ben Carson said.
Well, I had a secondary thought on that, which was if we're going to start saying Washington ethics are. Right up against the line, but as long as it's not illegal, that might work when there's Republican infighting. But then when they started to hit Hillary Clinton on things, they started to use those same lines and say, as long as it's, you know, something you can get away with, it doesn't matter if it's illegal or not. It's like, didn't you just say that Washington ethics are if as long as it is not illegal? And
right. Well, they're claiming it is illegal.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I felt like there was a little, you know.
Yeah.
So they. Came back and asked Cruz, essentially, why would you tell your staffers or why would your staffers have done that? Why wouldn't you just call Ted Cruz or his campaign and said,
hey. He blamed it on Wolf Blitzer.
He did. He's like, well, we had this CNN report and they were reporting it on the news for 2.5 hours and, you know, we just went with it. And the question wasn't answered, which is why didn't you just fucking call the campaign and say, hey, are you guys dropping out? Which, of course, is because they knew he wasn't and they wanted...
No, yeah, it was a dirty trick. Everybody knows it was a dirty trick.
Everyone knows it was a dirty trick. And Ben Carson's, you know, ultimate line finally on that was, you know, he said, you know, there was a tweet from CNN. They retracted it within 1 minute of the original tweet coming out.
So you're full of shit,
and
basically.
Yeah. So, but he didn't say you're full of shit.
No,
he
but,
said,
yeah.
He said, so those are the facts and whether or not anybody noticed that that was what was happening... I guess the voters will decide on what the facts are, which was like, why don't you just hit him? Like, why don't you just say bullshit?
He's not gonna.
No.
Okay, so next, I loved this because Rick Santorum dropped out of the race after the Iowa caucuses, and he endorsed Rubio. And he was asked by a reporter, and I can't remember what agency, can you tell me why you're endorsing Rubio in terms of what are his accomplishments? And Rick Santorum basically said, I don't think he has any.
He
and so the moderators came out and said, hey, so what are your qualifications or what are your accomplishments? And I thought it was really interesting because he's been asked this question before and he's always said, you know, if we're just looking at qualifications,
vote for Hillary.
He didn't say that this time. He
said Biden.
He said, vote for Biden, who's not running, by the way. And so... I thought that was really an interesting comeback. He's saying, like...
Oh, so it doesn't sound like the exact same thing again, even though it is the exact same thing.
The exact same thing. He's just a different guy.
Just throw it a different guy.
Yeah.
It'll be Harry Reid next.
Right, Harry. I mean, these people are not running for president, so you can't actually vote for Biden or Harry Reid. But he can no longer say vote for Hillary because people are voting for Hillary. So, Chris Christie was next.
I just wanted to fill something in on that, what he said.
Santorum.
He didn't say anything about what he felt his major accomplishments were, and he wasn't right or wrong. He just totally dodged the entire thing. He said, if you look at being a minority in the United States Senate in 4 years and nothing got done, I guess it's hard to say where there were accomplishments. It was a complete gridlock.
Okay.
But so that means none.
So that's great justification for endorsing the guy then. You didn't do anything. I just like him.
Yeah.
I think Santorum endorsed him.
I just think he's
Santorum
the winning horse.
Wanted to win something at one time ever in his life. I want to win something, so I want to endorse the guy I think's likely to win.
Yeah.
I think Santorum's right. But I think that's where that comes from. So Christie came up next.
Let's get to where Christie broke Marco Rubio.
Oh my God, this is amazing. It's right now.
He broke him.
He did.
This
Marco Rubio
good.
showed that he has robot brain instead of human brain. So Christie's responding to this idea that Rubio's not qualified, and he said, you know, governors think about problem solving and legislators think about dropping bills, and you're not qualified. And he said, you know, when you list your list of accomplishments, you often talk about the Hezbollah sanctions, but you didn't even vote on that. And that is not leadership. That is truancy. And then he compared him to Obama. Don't make the same mistakes 8 years ago. This is a guy who's only been in the Senate for a couple of years, and he's just not qualified. He doesn't have the things, doesn't have experience, and just he's Obama, right? Rubio is the next Obama.
And this was a theme.
Yeah.
So then Rubio says something he's about to say five times.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
Yes.
Oh, basically.
He says, Obama knows, if you don't think Obama knows what he's doing, Obama knows exactly what he's doing. And then this little rant about, like, Obama's destroying the country and Obama's trying to take us backwards, and it really
doesn't...
He's trying
to make us like every other country in the world, and he's trying to ruin American exceptionalism by making us like the other countries.
Right.
It doesn't address anything about what Christie said. And so, and he said that the first, that was the first thing he said, too, in the previous question about his qualifications. He mentioned it. And then Christie said, like, Hezbollah, blah, blah, blah. He said it again. And then Christie goes, hey, there it is again. That's that 25-second memorized speech that he has. And then Rubio comes back and goes...
says it again.
he said the exact same thing.
Obama? If you don't think Obama knows what he's doing, Obama knows exactly what he's doing. And the crowd just went like, oh, my God, he's doing it again. And Christie...
I'm stuck in a loop.
They just show Christie for a second, and he looks incredulous. He just goes like, that's the same speech, dude. And then he goes... He's like, no, it's... I know that what you were saying, but that's... So, anyway... Obama knows exactly what he's doing, and you're like, that's like the fourth time, dude. Like, you can't
in the same minute. Like, in the same minute.
404 Rubio not found. I just repeat on loop.
It was amazing. It really was.
Amazing.
We had to pause it. We were all literally cackling. Just unbelievable.
I was worried for a second that that was it. That was all you're ever going to hear from Marco Rubio again in his lifetime.
It might be. I mean, that was so bad.
It was so bad. And then he's like, well, you know, when there was an emergency in New Jersey, Chris Christie didn't want to go back. He wanted to stay in Iowa, and the voters had to shame him into going back.
Which
and
is true.
That's true. And they got this back and forth, like, you didn't want to go back. You're not an ESP. Mind reader, I did want to go back. No, you didn't. I did. They, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Actually,
and then, you know, he's...
I read a lot of things about it at the time. Not just for this debate, but when he was being called to come back,
and he goes, yeah, this is where Marco Rubio gets ugly when he's off his talking points. Which I thought was funny considering the loop that he just got stuck
in. Chris Christie was very entertaining the first half of this debate.
He was great.
He was actually really on point. I think he did an extra couple lines tonight just to make sure that...
Oh, hey, we're not getting to the drug abuse section.
But no,
Red Bulls. We'll give him the benefit
of
the
Bulls.
Doubt.
Red Bulls. He had a couple extra Red Bulls. No, I did think that he was on the attack tonight, and in a way that didn't get
nasty. He telegraphed it. I guess Marco Rubio doesn't watch the news, because Marco Rubio, Christie, has been telegraphing that he's going to come after Rubio all week.
Oh, absolutely.
He's been saying it, and Rubio wasn't ready for it for some reason.
No, I think in debate prep, Christie knew precisely what the things he wanted to hit him on were going to be.
And I think Rubio's debate prep was obviously, hey, memorize these five things to say and say them.
And say them no matter what, which he does every debate.
All but one of those things for the first 10 minutes, just repeating the same thing.
I was talking to Rachel the other day, as a matter of fact. She's like, well, there's this Rubio surge, and he gave this great speech. And yeah, he's great with prepared text. And then I said, watch out, though, and especially, like, we still got seven guys on stage when it's like one-on-one, and for 5 minutes you saw what happened when it was one-on-one back and forth, and he melted down.
He fell down, he just melted down, so imagine him
on a stage with Hillary Clinton
going back and forth, she will eat him alive.
It would be ugly, it would be so fun to watch.
Oh my god,
you know the HBO movie Game Change, when they started talking about what they did for Sarah Palin prep once they realized she really had no idea what she was talking about at all.
She knew nothing.
They were just like, here, you need to memorize these like seven things.
Yeah,
and she memorized literally just those seven things. And anytime anyone deviated from that, it was just a word salad. We saw that tonight. Yeah. Left and right. 100%. Not just from Rubio, but we saw it.
Well, Rubio especially, though.
Rubio was the prime example.
It reminded me of that, too.
Out of Jeb Bush.
Yep.
Which we'll get to.
Carson.
We saw Carson's
his own, his Trump? Own brand.
Trump is his own brand of it. But no, but I think Rubio is exactly to your point, Dana, that, you know, if you don't know how to answer questions, I'll just make you memorize these 10 things, and if you say them...
That we think are going to work, so we'll just repeat them and repeat them and repeat
but he forgot the other 9 and just repeated the same one over and over and over like a glitch in a
in the
program,
Matrix.
In the Matrix, and it was like, what is he saying?
It was embarrassing.
It was awful.
Can we get the Rubio model without skip, or with skip protection?
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Even Bill Kristol had to come on, and who's big shill for the establishment, and say, yeah, that was terrible.
That was crazy.
Bad. Yeah.
Even the crowd, you could hear audibly everyone being like, really uncomfortable. Like, Anna, if you're listening, just go watch the first 10 minutes, and you will
love
it.
If you have
so much
awkward.
Yeah. Oh my God, it was great.
Like, it's not even them booing, it's just everyone kind of going like,
again. You just said that. Okay, so the final thing sort of in the intros was Bush. They asked him, you know, previously, because they're both from Florida, right? You've said that you think Rubio was great for president or vice president. He said the same about you, blah, blah, blah. And now you guys are attacking each other, and what's that about? Which I thought was a really stupid question because they weren't running each other against each other back then. And Bush answered it that way. He basically said, you know, yeah, we said all that stuff. That was 2012. Like, let's move on.
I actually thought that was a really I thought that was a really shitty answer. I was kind of taken aback that he would be that blunt and say, like, yeah, he said I would be a great vice, and so I said he would be a great vice, because that's the politically right thing to do. And I was like, what a fucking shallow answer.
Well, that's Jeb. This is Jeb.
I mean, yeah, it's honest.
This is the Jeb campaign.
I mean, it's certainly true, but, like...
It lifeless, dull...
What a... Uninspiring. Thoughtful, uninspired answer.
That's Jeb campaign in a nutshell.
Yeah. And the rest of what he said was just like, here's my record, I was the governor, I did things that were good, and this is what they are that I've heard.
This is Jeb's swan song
it's
here.
It's so monotonous, that, like, I tune out. I can't even write it down.
If you wanted to go for one of the Milk Toast guys, I think tonight, then I guess you'd go with Kasich. You certainly wouldn't go with Jeb.
Kasich was a much better Milk Toast guy than Jeb,
exactly.
Absolutely.
That's why I'll probably win New Hampshire.
Okay, so...
Full disclosure, I was in kindergarten with Jeb's son. So there's that.
Yeah, which is a really interesting story.
Not really.
We'll get to, I think it's funny. I like it. But anyway. Okay, so they started talking about...
Oh, God.
This was great. North Korea. And apparently Ben Carson's guys jumped ship
and came over
to Ted Cruz.
Let's back up a hot second.
So the actual news...
Is that supposedly earlier tonight... They launched what could be like an ICBM type thing for a test that, in theory, if it actually worked, could reach the U.S.
But it doesn't, and didn't, and won't.
Yeah, but but it was a good line to see who's gonna bomb who first.
It was also I was interested
bang the war
to see
drums.
Because it was news. I don't know, 2 hours before the debate. So when they said like it just came through,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to know. I was interested to see how they would react and to see if anybody said like, oh, we hadn't known that because we were all sitting in the green room. Everyone acted like they were like in the sit room, ready to react.
Some of them may
moment.
Have been advised if they had good campaign managers,
right.
Like, hey, this thing
said,
just happened,
just
it might
happened.
Come up.
It might come up, yeah, exactly,
yeah.
But everyone acted,
I'm sure Carson's didn't.
Everyone acted like it was old news, and, like, they even said in the question, like, several moments ago we were notified that
yeah.
North Korea did this.
Well, and Ted Cruz was defensive about that later, but we'll get to that in a sec.
Sure.
Basically what they said was, this is what happened, sort of what... With that, plus the nuclear testing that's been going on, how would you respond to a nuclear North Korea? And he went and decided to attack Bill Clinton and Wendy Sherman.
Which made no sense.
And then linked that somehow back to the bad Iran deal. And then the craziest, most wonderful thing happened. He talked about how North Korea is going to launch a satellite with a nuke on it that's going to go around the globe and around the Earth and on it's also going to be an EMP, which could be set off and take down the electrical grid of California and kill millions of people on the eastern seaboard.
Which is
straight up out of Ben Carson's last debate, like, time he was asked. And I'm like, did they just jump ship? And they're like, Cruz is winning now. Let's go tell him about the EMP. thing, I mean, but he was way more specific of like, it's a satellite with a nuke on it and an
EMP. Let me explain something.
Like, some extra special fun part, which was that it goes to a satellite first, because last time it was an ICBM with an EMP on it. Now it's an ICBM that can't be launched, but could be
dropped from a satellite.
That's how gravity works.
Yes.
Okay. And, let me explain the use of EMP nuclear detonation in a war. It would potentially be used, and this was gamed out by the Soviets and the U.S. as a first strike to cripple electronics communications. It could disable some motorized vehicles, but they're not really sure how effective that would be. So it would be like the first wave of an oncoming attack. So if you believe the rebooted Red Dawn were the North Koreans attack, where they invade, I guess that's plausible. Other than that, it's like the goofiest 8th grade fan fiction.
Well, it feels very much like the people that are advising him now and Ben Carson before are stuck in pre-9/11
Ted Cruz knows that's such bullshit. It's just this.
Is it just fear-mongering?
Lowest common denominator fear-mongering for the dumbest, most uneducated people.
I guarantee you the reason that anyone brings up an EMP at all is because they figure that Ocean's 11 had at least like 31 million viewers when it went into theaters, and they know that they all know that an EMP could take out the Las Vegas casino power grid, and they know that that could lead to some sort of attack.
Or they see The Matrix, where they use the EMP device to
disarm
the Sentinels.
That's entirely possible, too. The Sentinels totally get stuck.
No, EMP is a thing, but it's not what he thinks it is, and it's definitely not what
his
voters... It
doesn't work anywhere near... Like,
and it's not something the North Koreans are going to glue to a satellite... and drop in space?
It's constantly used as a fear-mongering device for a more and more technological age as we become more and more reliant on things.
Right.
To be automated. Mm-hmm. But when we start talking about things like wastewater treatment plants or combustion engines and things like that, coal treatment plants, like they, maybe some of the computers that control some of the ways in which they're run might disappear or you
could
know
go offline
down, could
but it's
go
not
offline.
Like we don't have backups but it's not, for the most important
no, everything is designed with fail safes. I mean, as an engineer, I minored in environmental engineering. I know if you set an EMP off at the Fort Collins wastewater treatment plant, everything just shuts down.
Right.
Like, millions of lives aren't going to be lost. Like,
what lives are going to be lost when electronics go out?
It's going to be like a 12-minute wait before everything comes back online when they reset.
When they have the backup generators.
Like, how long does it take
and...
to turn your computer off and turn your computer back on?
But the voter that he's going for has no idea about any of this.
Right.
He just heard North Koreans nuke on a satellite, millions of people dead.
Flying around the Earth.
If Hillary's president.
Okay, so this
a good argument could be made if you wanted to say for an EMP in a hospital, if some sort of the life-saving life support machines go offline, that could actually be a serious concern. But we're not talking about
they have backups
of lives
too.
Lost.
They all have backup generators.
An EMP would affect their backup generators as well.
Would it?
Because
they're gas-powered, most of them, aren't they?
They are, and they're not online until the power goes off. And so when the power goes off, the gas generators
depends
come online.
Depends entirely on the system that people put in place to do it. If it was something that you electrically turn on to be the backup, then the electrical connection between them would... that's modern
generation.
All right,
let's just...
It really doesn't
the North Koreans aren't dropping an EMP on us.
No, it's way besides the point.
Okay. So, Marco Rubio is next, and his computer... This is when I wrote down 404. Marco Rubio is broken. It's gone. He's done. He has no ability to answer basic question. So Martha Raddatz is asking him the same question, basically, that she asked Ted Cruz, which was, given the ICBM capabilities, would you preemptively strike the missile? And he says, well, it's currently U.S. policy to take out a missile mid-flight if it's aimed at the U.S. or poses a threat. And she says, right. So I was asking about a preemptive strike. And he goes, well, it's currently U.S. policy to take out any missile aimed at the U.S. in mid-flight. And she goes,
404, Marco,
I'm sorry,
Rubio, not found.
Rubio, I'm asking you about a preemptive strike. And he goes,
It is currently
U.S. policy. And I know you're asking about a preemptive strike.
But I just wanted
to say that even though you're asking about a preemptive strike, I just wanted to say it is currently U.S. policy. And you're like, oh, my God. He literally doesn't know anything. He's just repeating back script that he's memorized.
Let's stop for a second. Let's think about the level of crazy here. When Martha Raddatz is asking, would you preemptively strike a test missile that North Korea is supposedly testing to one day maybe have an ICBM. Like, that's just nuts.
Right.
Nobody's ever going to preemptively bomb a test. A test missile without a warhead on it.
I actually generally thought the level of questions in this entire debate was extremely biased towards crazy.
Most
of the questions gave them the ground that said, like, okay, we'll give you that Iran's actively trying to kill us and have nuclear weapons and are aiming them directly at us.
And what are you going to do?
Eat your baby.
We'll give you that there's a caliphate and that they are gaining ground day by day. What will you do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And, like, most of the questions were so biased in that direction that
we're all going to die. Which one of you is going to make sure we die first?
We live the biggest hole when we're gone.
Literally. I mean, but then the crazy part is then Bush comes in and he's asked the question.
Oh God.
And he's like, of course I would preemptively strike a test site of a thing. I'm a Bush. He doesn't say that, well, but he basically that. He said
I might do it, sure.
No, he said of course. Of course I would do that.
All right, yeah.
Of course. And you're like, oh, that's shocking. That's shocking that you'd do a preemptive strike.
Something? Oh. Why did we bother asking?
He's running voice ads with GW doing the voiceover. So, I mean, he's going.
I know. I mean, he's
going for the
retro thing. Full on
Remember W. Like, he's so unpopular. He's like, well, some people liked my brother.
They also like his paintings now. And my mom's nice. And people don't hate my dad entirely.
Remind them you're a Bush. Remind them you're a Bush. It's like, but the Bush name. No. Some people liked it.
Some people voted. He won. Just, I don't know. It's so desperate. And he looks like a child. He looks like this little kid who's like a wimp that got beat up and desperate. It's, oh my God, he is the worst candidate, but it's amazing to
watch. You can't really blame him. I mean, like, the news stories mostly about him lately have been, like, even Barbara Bush came out and said specifically publicly, like, I wouldn't want Jeb to run.
Well, that was before he started running, but
But I mean, it's getting more traction, and, like, it's on most headlines now.
But this is it. This is it. I mean, he's going to finish, I don't know, if he finishes below 10% here, fifth or sixth, that's probably it for Jeb. I can't imagine him going on.
I agree.
I don't see him doing dick in New Hampshire. I don't.
Well, we'll see. I mean, he's polling around 9-10%, which is okay for him. So we'll see.
Was that before everyone else dropped out, though? When was the last poll
conducted?
No, that was recent.
Was
still including Santorum? And
No, this was recent. Okay. This was recent.
I was going to say, I don't see a lot of Rand Paul supporters running directly to the Jeb.
No. They just probably won't vote. Or maybe they'll vote for Bernie.
Or Bernie Sanders.
It could be. Yeah, it's open primary. So what's next? We'll get to that then, though.
We're going to kind of, there's a lot to go over tonight, so we're going to skip over some of the, like, we've already heard this stuff.
Yeah,
which is not a whole lot, but we're going to get to immigration next, because they talked about it in some context that I thought was interesting. They asked Kasich about deportation, specifically that he has said in the past, you know, it's not really probable or reasonable to deport 11.5 million people that are in this country. And that's not really conservative. And what do you say about that?
Slap cuffs on parents while the kids are crying and just, like, leave them to fend for themselves.
Exactly.
Which,
like,
is
what
apparently the Trump plan.
Yeah.
Although they didn't ask him about it tonight.
We're going to get to who said that about that, which was Cruz, which is fucking nuts. But Kasich said, you know, we have to finish the border. Not the fence, but the border, which I don't know what that means. I think he meant the fence.
Yeah.
And then he went very Kasich. Guest workers, back taxes, fines, no citizenship, but legalization. And in the first 100 days, I will do XYZ. So he sort of railed against Obama's executive order and said he would get rid of that. And then he said later, in the first 100 days, and then he sort of laid out Obama's executive actions that he will do.
They keep doing
this.
That was
pretty crazy. Yeah. This is a common theme.
They keep saying they hate Obama's executive orders. So I'm going to do it, with failing to add that the only reason Obama did those executive orders is because Congress refused to move.
Because they couldn't get it done.
On it at all.
Right.
Well, and this is something that I looked up specifically while we were looking at it, because it's something that's been kind of a Republican and a Democratic talking point on both sides about what's been happening with the deportation numbers.
Yeah.
Obama has gone on record as calling himself the deporter-in-chief. on certain things, and
well, I don't think he calls himself that, but he has been called that.
He has said it himself.
That's awful.
Which
okay.
is a little
gross,
shitty.
Gross, gross, gross. Okay.
I believe it was on the 2012 trail. He called himself that.
Gross.
But the actual fact of the matter is the number of people who have left the country is less. The reason that the numbers are hard to describe, and everyone can kind of make them work for whatever argument they want to make,
yeah,
is because the actual people who have left the country, who have been made to leave the country because of government action, has gone down. The thing is, under Bush, and before anyone before Obama, what they did was things called removals. And so they actually just, ICE would come by, whatever agency would come by. If you were caught committing a crime and you were not a legal person
citizen
in the country,
sure.
You were just kicked out of the country and removed and sent back to your previous country. And nothing went into a file, nothing was documented,
wow.
no nothing. They just undocumentedly just sent you back to where you came from and kicked
just
you out.
Just like put you on a plane.
Yeah, like you ever see Born in East L.A. with Cheech Marin?
Yeah, yes.
It's that,
yes,
exactly.
It's that.
No, I don't
exactly
know what that.
That
is, but okay, go ahead.
So there are removals. I'm sorry, I'm getting this backward.
You have to talk to me.
I'm just looking at my source, hold on. So those were returns. Not removals, I misspoke.
Returns. Okay.
That's when you just send somebody back, don't worry about documentation, just kick them the fuck out and hope they don't come back.
Okay.
Under the Barack Obama administration, most returns have turned into what is termed as removals, which means that there's a paperwork
thing
required, and we say, like, here's why we're sending you back, here's why you can't return, we've got your name on file, some biometrics necessarily on file, depending on what's been done.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a significant amount of overhead associated with that.
So
when we say that deportation has increased under Obama, the actual number of people displaced from America has gone down, but the number of legit deportations...
On the record?
On
what
the
you're
record,
saying, on the record, deportations has gone up.
Has increased.
Because Obama has done it on record.
Because everything's been on record rather
gotcha.
Than just kicking people the fuck out and not worrying about the paper trail or worrying about what happens.
Well,
which,
and that's interesting because when you think about what people complain about, which
right.
is the return of people and how
yes.
it doesn't matter, Obama actually has done more than his Republican predecessor in terms of saying, we're going to keep track of you, and if you come back, like, we will know who you are, whereas his predecessor didn't keep track of anything and just
right.
said, kick you back out and hope you don't come back.
Right.
Right.
And
okay.
it's worth noting that the number of returns doesn't matter on if whether or not you were committing a crime. You were just found to not be documented.
Okay.
We'll just straight up return you, whereas we only do removals if there's an associated crime.
Well, that's not true.
That is true.
So anecdotally, we are totally deporting people that have not committed crimes.
So
just... That's
well, if you're accused of
a crime. So hold on. Those are still returns. I'm not saying under Barack Obama there are no more returns.
Oh, we're still doing returns.
They're
we're
still
also
returns.
Doing removals.
Yeah. So
I see.
We might throw this up on there if this is confusing for anybody, but it's a nice little graph about it's kind of a...
Yeah, we'll put the link into it. Remind
yeah,
me.
Yeah. It looks better as a graph than anything I could describe. But returns still exist, but removals have been the shift.
So finishing with immigration before we take a break here.
Okay, so Cruz got asked about it. Basically, he was asked specifically, how do you deport 11.5 million Americans? And he said, go to tedcruz.com, wall, border control. And then he started making these, like, really crazy, like, fixed-wing boot jet things that no one understands, that someone gave him some, like, language about that I don't think he understands and certainly no one else does about the kind of surveillance planes that they might use. And
I think
then,
he just used it to make himself sound smart.
Yeah,
but.
E-verify, biometric entry, no sanctuary cities, that we would take all of the funding away from cities that don't want to enforce federal law, no welfare benefits for illegals. And then they asked him, so going back to what Kasich said, what about the families? When you take the mother out of the home, when there's, you know, one or more children in that home that are legal American citizens, what do we do about that? And he really was uncomfortable and didn't want to answer that question and essentially said, my job is to enforce the law. And I don't give a shit about those kids or their situation or anything else. I'm going to enforce the law and the law is there to be enforced and that's my job.
I actually didn't understand his answer because he didn't really answer it. So, I mean...
Well, to me,
He did say, I don't give a shit. But he didn't talk about the logistics of, do those kids go back?
Oh, no, nobody talks about the logistics.
No, he didn't say, I don't give a shit. He just said, I'm here to enforce the law, which implied that he didn't
give a shit. I don't give a shit.
So this is one of the ways where the Republicans have gone to the right. On other things, they've actually kind of gone to the left. We'll get to that. Or at least they're talking like they're gone to the left. Or it could just be because they're in New Hampshire. But anything else on immigration before we take a quick break here?
Not really. Christy didn't answer the question and instead talked about how he fought teachers' unions.
Which makes him a really
and
popular
teacher.
And
Rubio was like, Gang of Eight, gave the same answer he gives every time, which is, until we enforce the laws we have, we can't make new laws, blah, blah, blah. So that was really all for immigration.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back and a little preview. Marco Rubio actually said something we all agreed with.
Yeah.
It's not quite what you think, but we'll get to that.
Drum roll.
Be right back. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony, covering the debate here Saturday night, February 6th. And where were we?
All right, so the next thing we're going to cover is healthcare. Trump was asked specifically about some comments he made that seemed like he was in favor of universal healthcare. And the moderator asked him, basically, you sound closer to Bernie Sanders than the Republican Party. And of course, he was like, no, that's completely inaccurate. That's not true at all. I want to repeal every word of Obamacare, and I want to replace it with something, quote, so much better, because he's Trump.
Just to interrupt you one quick second.
Yeah.
Every time any of them say, I want to repeal every word of Obamacare, will one of the moderators please say, so I guess that includes covering pre-existing conditions, staying on your parents' health care until you're 26, cost-sharing reductions, subsidies.
Correct.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving
on.
Well, the last time anybody actually got really specific about it, they
it was Cruz, and he did it again tonight.
They would like to take away the state-based thing and make it a more federal thing, which is precisely what
states' rights. Don't let the federal government run our health care.
We'd like it to be across state lines.
Yeah,
and
which means federal, by the way, because that's what across state lines means.
In this country, yes. I mean, you can't say, like, we're going to do a four corners state thing.
Which is completely antithetical to their whole get rid of the federal government, let the states control everything. But in this case, they have to use it because Obamacare.
If you look at the law and you look at the Supreme Court, interstate commerce means that if you cross state lines, the federal government has authority. So when Ted Cruz says he would like to make state healthcare plans available across state lines, what he means is that the federal government should have authority to do healthcare,
exactly,
which is what we're talking about. But anyway,
he wants more federal control of the healthcare system than Obamacare.
He wants to have,
but it won't be called Obamacare.
I want it to be not Obamacare, and I want it to be across state lines, and I want the federal government to be out of it,
which is not possible.
Makes no fucking sense,
right? So Trump, back to him, repeal and replace, so much better. Increased insurance competition, and then he did something really interesting. He said, you know, I don't think that we should let people die in the streets. I think that basically everyone should be covered, and no one wants to see people dying in the streets because they don't have health insurance. And we kind of just all looked at each other and went,
Yeah,
no, I agree. And so there was no follow-up of, hey, Trump, so if that's how you feel, then everyone should have health care, right? If we are against the idea of people dying in the streets because they don't have health insurance, then it's kind of a human right that everyone should have it. So universal health care? No one said that to him. But that is basically what he implied. He said people shouldn't die in the streets because they don't have health insurance.
mean, he really implied that he might have some innovative new way of.
Well, he talks about health savings accounts and like increased insurance competition and stuff. But really, when he came down to like why I think this is important, it felt very much like
very left.
Yeah.
And Ben Carson jumped in several times to talk about his not health savings accounts, but health
empowerment plan.
That's a Frank Luntz buzzword if I ever heard one.
Health empowerment plan.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they don't sound that enticing. If
not when people realize that there's a huge deductible associated with them.
Right. I mean, it sounds like a health savings account that can be passed from one person to another, which they're going to argue cannot be taxed as it passes from one person to another.
Well, it's not. The money you put into it isn't taxed.
Well,
the money you would put into it wouldn't be taxed. So, and it passes from one generation to another as people die. But I don't see how that's helpful.
Was that what he was trying to say? Because I was very confused by what he was saying, Carson. He was like, and then these health insurance policies get passed from, generation to generation. And I was like, the health insurance?
Yeah,
like,
I think that's what he's trying to say, but it's Ben Carson, so it comes out as gibberish.
Earthly idea what he's saying?
He's speaking in tongues.
And when Ted Cruz was asked, he literally did the same thing that we talked about the last time, which was, I'm going to repeal Obamacare. Socialized medicine doesn't work. There's rationing. It's never worked in any country. And we all looked at each other and went, except every other country that has it.
And he went on to list off the seven things he would like to do, which are the seven main tenets of Obamacare.
Correct. So it's
some of them,
getting, yeah. Yeah, I mean, not
just
everything.
Getting stupid.
But, yeah, it's just
point.
Stupid. Okay, so then moving on from that, just to touch briefly on eminent domain, we don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but they asked Trump about eminent domain because he's been a supporter of it as a private business person, which makes sense. And I have to say that he wasn't wrong when he talked about
it.
He
was honest.
He said,
yeah, dumbasses, we wouldn't have highways.
We wouldn't have highways. We wouldn't have
power
hospitals.
Plants.
We wouldn't have power plants.
Yeah,
we wouldn't have a lot of things. And that's absolutely true.
And you guys love Keystone so much. Yeah, guess what? There's no Keystone without eminent domain, idiots.
Yeah. And Jeb Bush came back and said, like, no, because that's for public
purposes.
That's
a public works program.
And
I was like, what?
Then Trump came back and was like, well, Keystone's not public, it's private. And Jeb was like,
it's not even American, it's Canadian.
Exactly.
I was particularly disappointed in Trump because I know for a fact that he knows the specifics about the Keystone Pipeline deal, and he could have hit him very hard in a way that would have actually meant something if he'd have said, What makes you, because he doesn't have to.
Jeb's a dead man walking.
That's true, but it would have made him sound smarter when he says, you know, like, I'm good at making these deals, and I'm an amazing deal maker, and I understand how these things work.
He's not trying to sound smart.
If he would have come out and said, like, this specific deal with this specific person, why do you think that's
public? I know, Dana,
public? And then, you know, Jeb says, no, that is for public use.
Trump needs to sound clever, not smart, because smart is erudite, and that's exactly what his supporters don't want. They don't want those hoity-toity liberal elites.
No, I think that's true, and I think that's what he's going for and why he backed down from it, because I know he knows the specifics.
Right.
But I don't understand why it makes sense for him to sound like a great deal-maker, but not invoke the specific
because then he sounds like a wonk.
He sounds smart. Yeah.
And his supporters don't want
that. No, it makes him sound
that.
Like a great fucking deal maker.
Well, but this was really interesting, too, because this was the moment in the debate where Trump became the bully. Full on, like,
Jeb
wants to sound like a tough guy right now, and he's not a tough guy right
now.
He
made, like, a shush face at him.
He did.
Like,
he was, stop talking.
Stuck his finger
in
his mouth.
Literally shushed him.
And the Bush supporters there booed him, and he didn't care.
No, he, exactly. Well,
not only did he not care, he then said, He took a moment from his 30 seconds to be like, you know why everyone's booing here is because everyone who's here
is a donor.
A donor. And that's how people got tickets, is being a Bush donor.
Well, not a Bush donor,
well,
a donor specifically.
Well, people
were
cheering for him, too, so that didn't really make sense.
Well, he said, no one that's in the audience is not a donor, and I don't have donors because I'm self-financing my campaign. And the audience, the entire time he's doing all of this, from making fun of Jeb at the beginning to shushing him to talking about the audience, is booing him, and he's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. Boo me. I don't care. Like, you people are all bought and paid
for. Beating up on Jeb has been working for him the whole time.
I mean,
I think it was a good move on his end.
All
the thing I didn't think was a good move on his end was just to sound like, as a person who's a really good deal maker, and to say, like, I really understand what's going on here, to not say, you know, when he says, you really think that the Keystone Pipeline is a public thing. Well, you know it's private.
Yeah.
And then Bush turns around and says,
because he can't.
Yeah, yeah, it's very public. And then he just kind of shrugs it off and is like, well, you know you're wrong. Like, people can look it up. But and it's like, why don't you just say, like, just name the three companies that are engaged in it. Like,
yeah, TransCanada.
You know he knows.
Of course.
You know he could put them out.
Because it's more effective to just go shh and call him a wuss.
Yeah.
And he did. I mean, and it's so funny because I don't like bullies, but watching Jeb react to that, like, the sort of gains he got in the last debate when Trump wasn't there and he looked like someone who could be a leader... versus tonight.
All gone tonight.
Completely gone.
Yeah, Trump
he looked
just...
like a beat up little kid on a playground that was like, "Don't, I'm going to tell my mom." I mean, he literally was like,
and he
cowering.
Literally will probably go tell
him.
I'm
going to
go tell Reince.
I'm going to go tell Reince you're mean to me. Nobody likes, don't say that. Mom. Like, he looked like a cowering weakling. And I think that's Trump's point. I think that's what he's trying to do. But, like,
and
it was
so
effective. Jeb is just can't.
He can't.
He has none of the charm of George W. Bush. He has none of the pragmatism of his father.
Trump has killed his candidate. I mean, he's a bad candidate anyway, but Trump has just hastened his demise.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, he's.
This was like the Mortal Kombat finish him fatality.
Get over here.
Finish him. Yeah, I completely agree. Okay, we're going to skip over some stuff because if you would like to know how any of these candidates feel about war or ISIS or Libya
or bombing or anything else,
I mean, it's exactly the same lines they've used with almost the exact same language. Nothing really to note.
Nothing new.
Either listen to our previous podcast or watch the previous debates. Nothing new.
Nothing
here.
New. Nope. Nothing at all. They talked about torture briefly, and again, that's kind of the same stuff.
I want to quickly, Cruz went to the John Yoo document that's been discredited and basically called a war crime and in saying that it's okay to waterboard, it's not really torture, and then we'll also do other torture stuff because torture, and I'm so tough, I'm too.
Well, and it was really funny because he basically, like, had this little fantasy moment where he's Jack Bauer from 24, and he's like, if a city was in danger and I was the one to stop it from torturing
someone,
I would do it to save that city. Like, he's literally reenacting in his head an episode of 24 where you have to torture someone to save the city in the next 10 minutes. Well, okay, the entire
maybe he's playing Splinter Cell. He's thinking of that great Splinter Cell he was playing the other night.
I mean, it was pretty funny. I mean,
on PS4.
It's horrific, of course, but I mean, yeah.
One thing I will say that I thought was worth noting was Cruz redefining torture. Just kind of using, in your own words, what do you think torture is? And I forget.
No, that was from the John Yoo memo that said, like, body dismemberment or death.
Right.
And, right.
I just took the moment to take a couple minutes and just Google UN definition of torture. And it is simply what we would all think would
it's torture.
Be torture.
Yeah.
Physical, intentional infliction of pain on a person to achieve your goal.
Yeah.
Which is not what Ted Cruz said. And
it's not what the Bush administration or Dick Cheney or Rumsfeld. Right. So if you want more of that, vote for Ted Cruz. Yeah.
Okay, so we have a lot to cover, so I'm going to move on really quick. They brought up heroin tonight, and the reason for that is that 48% of people in New Hampshire, which is where the next primary is going to be on Tuesday and where they were debating tonight, the statistic is that 48% of people in New Hampshire have known someone who has abused heroin.
That's crazy high number.
Which is a crazy high number. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and we can get into that now or we can get into it later. But they addressed it, which I really appreciated. Cruz gave a story about his older sister that he wanted to really quickly classify as his half-sister, who had drug addiction problems, and she had a son who Cruz helped by putting him in military school, and you know, him and his father, I guess it was his father's daughter, that's why it was his half-sister.
Right.
Tried to help her, found her in a crack house, were unable to help her, and she eventually died of an overdose, and it was really confusing. I don't know that Cruz understands exactly what the differences between heroin and crack and pills and things, but it doesn't
matter.
I'll
give him the benefit of the doubt that just the point was he knew somebody who suffered with addiction. So
sure, a close family relative of his. Right. That's a tragic story and one that most people probably can relate to. And then what upset me about that was that he then went on to say, what we really need to be focusing on is federal programs having to do with Alcoholics Anonymous and charities – And
then he quickly turned it to the immigrants.
Churches, and then he talked about the Mexican cartel and securing the borders. And so it became, first of all, AA and churches and charities have fucking nothing to do with federal funding. And number two, well, now we're blaming immigrants on the heroin problem in New Hampshire?
Well, that
New
was
Hampshire, no.
New Hampshire is pretty fucking far away from Mexico last time I checked.
If you go back to Bush's faith-based initiatives, there is precedence for federally subsidizing these things. So he's trying to roll back to that, which is unconstitutional, by the way.
Yeah, it's not possible.
No, it's possible if you have a Republican Congress and a conservative Supreme Court, but it shouldn't be. It's unconstitutional.
If you have a sensible Supreme Court, it's not possible.
Well, but under President Cruz, what do you think we're going to have, boys and girls?
Yep.
But moving on from that, what these people are failing to realize is that the majority of heroin in this country comes from Afghanistan and Russia via Canada, from Mexico.
Correct.
Some of it comes from Mexico.
So Afghanistan, since we invaded, particularly, has expanded their opium production 10, 20, 50, a million fold.
Well, they've been doing it for years.
Yeah, but we have...
I mean, we used to pay the Taliban big bucks to stop the import of heroin, and they kept doing it anyway.
Right, well, and then Karzai, his brother... His brother, Karzai's brother... has been linked to specifically tied to the opium fields in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah. All the rich guys there.
And into the moving out of those.
Exporting.
Exporting. Thank you. the opium into Russia and places that can sort of make it into heroin. And then that goes to Canada and specifically British Columbia. And then that comes into the United States. So really blaming Mexican immigrants on the heroin problem in New Hampshire makes less sense than looking at the reality that it comes from the war that we started in Afghanistan.
They heard about a drug mule once, so yargle bargle, build a wall.
Yep.
Well, and if we want to be overly specific, what we're really talking about is the opium trade, because heroin can be made anywhere.
Sure.
It's a very, very easy process.
It's about where you grow the opium.
It's where you grow the opium.
You're exactly right. Yep.
The Middle East, Russia, China, these places are where a significant amount of the opium is grown, where it becomes heroin,
can be
really
anywhere.
Inconsequential.
Sure. But the opium, there's large opium fields in Afghanistan.
Like absolutely.
Massive, massive production of opium. Chris Christie jumped in because he's from New Jersey and they have also a heroin problem. And he talked about the steps there that they've been taking, which I applaud and commend, which is not to incarcerate people who are drug addicts, but rather to help them through rehabilitation. He talked about how their crime rate's gone down, their imprisonment rate's gone down.
He said the right things, but always take Chris Christie statistic spouting with a huge grain of salt.
Right.
Because he's a primo bullshitter.
Yeah, I was going to say, his actions I agree with 100%.
His statements. Whether that matches up with reality. Sense. Yeah.
There was a moment where he said that, let's see if I can get this right, there was a 20% reduction in the number of arrests, but a 10% reduction in the number of people who were.
So let me just actually read it really quick. It's the number of, let's see, give me one sec. Okay, so 10% decrease in incarceration and 20% decrease in crime.
Yeah, so if there's a 20% decrease in crime and a 10% decrease in incarceration, I can see maybe some weird sort of world in which that's possible, but not really.
Well, he's probably just throwing out bullshit numbers. This is what Christie does. That was my point.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that he had a different opinion than everyone else in terms of how to deal with people who have drug addiction problems and sort of incarceration issues and that kind of stuff.
For the most part, everybody on stage more or less agreed that to deal with the addiction problem requires maybe some more compassion and rehabilitation. And this is brand new for the Republican Party.
Oh, absolutely. Now, one thing I will say that only two of the people up there mentioned at all was Chris Christie was very clear on what the actual problem is, which is he even invoked OxyContin specifically. But we had a little conversation here about how it's really the way in which we treat pain management in this country that has led to this increase of black market heroin use.
Right. So if I can speak to that for a second, I dealt with chronic pain for a long time, and getting opiates, which is like Vicodin, Percocet, you know, anything that is an opioid pain medication.
On the strong end, Oxycontin.
Yeah, Oxycontin, very which is like a sort of time release.
Very soon.
Yeah, yeah, time release kind of version of Percocet. Is really difficult because doctor's offices and pain management clinics are being really heavily regulated by the FDA.
And
the DEA, specifically the DEA, right. For good reason. People were abusing it. And it became a real problem. However, why the heroin epidemic has become such an increase that you don't see in cases of cocaine or methamphetamines or any of those is that people who got hooked on opiates because their doctors prescribed them and maybe they overprescribed or they weren't monitoring their patients or their patients were abusing them for whatever reason, when they stopped being prescribed those medications or when they could no longer afford them, they went to the black market because heroin is essentially the same thing. Now, obviously, heroin you inject into your veins or you can smoke it.
Or snort it.
But generally, people inject it.
You can swallow it too.
And it becomes much more addictive that way. And so, but basically, hang on.
I want to be clear.
Hang on. So people started turning to heroin because it was cheaper and more accessible than prescription opiates. They could get it. There were no questions asked. They could get it whenever they wanted it, and it was much stronger and much more readily available to them. And that's why the epidemic has become what it has become.
And when you're in pain, you don't give a fuck. You just want to get rid of the goddamn pain.
Correct. And I want to be clear about this because I think it's obvious, maybe not overly obvious, but the different ways in which you take the medications or drugs have different effects. And if you start taking Oxycontin, but you're not being given enough of it, or you're being withheld on it, you might start snorting Oxycontin. If you become even a little bit more hard to come by, you can get rid of the time-release coating and start injecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't continue injecting Oxycontin because you've been cut off, so you go straight to injecting something else. Now, if you haven't... It's easy to see how each of these things are transferable.
Yes.
If you are eating Oxycontin, you can also eat heroin. It works the exact same way. You just have to know your drugs and know your doses.
Which people
don't.
And
people know these things in general or can look them up on different online forums.
But they don't always.
But you don't always, and it's easy to up it just a little bit more, just a little bit less based on what you want. But it's never really a little bit less. It's always a little bit more because when you're on something that gives you a little bit of a euphoric high, you chase that high just a little bit. Even if it's in a pain management perspective.
Yes.
And it's easy to see how you'd move from eating something that is in a solid form to a powdered form, which hits you much faster, to going to something to a...
Snorting it to shooting it. And because it's hard to know the doses of black market heroin, right? You're buying it on the streets.
Well, it's completely unregulated. So you have absolutely no idea what potency the heroin's at.
Researchers I've worked with, they actually go and...
Sure, but like the average
consumer. Research heroin's
great.
Street heroin, no.
Right. So the average
consumer... And it depends on where you are, obviously.
...of heroin doesn't know.
Supply and demand.
And so heroin overdoses have become an epidemic as well because people don't really know what the potency of the drug they're taking is. They don't know if it's different than yesterday's or tomorrow's. And there's been a really increased heroin overdose problem, which has led to a really incredible drug, which is called, anybody? Naltrexone, something like that. It's basically the drug that has been implemented in a lot of police departments fire departments around
the
country.
OD drug,
that if someone has overdosed on heroin, that you can inject them with this drug and it will bring them back.
Sure.
And that's decreased deaths.
That's
but
besides the point of solving the problem, though.
Well, we're getting a little in the weeds here, and we could do a whole episode on this, and we probably should at some point.
Oh, I could talk about this for days.
Yeah, we'll move on, but we will come back to this if you're interested. We'll do probably another whole episode on it.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good point. Okay, so let's move on. They talked about race. Specifically.
No.
Sort of.
I was...
It's more about cops.
Well, yeah.
Is there a difference?
Of course. So the first question was to Trump, because he had made a statement that the police officers in this country are
the
most mistreated people in our country.
He, like, tripled down on it.
He did.
He sort of half acknowledged, okay, yeah, maybe there's some police brutality once in a blue moon, but it's the cops who are totally getting
raw into
this deal.
They're mistreated, they're misunderstood.
Yeah, they're the real victims.
They're
the real victims.
Yeah, they're the real victims of
all this controversy.
And you know, that they don't want to, like, that they feel fear now that they're going to be, like,
fired, they can't
do their jobs right. And it was just like this blind. I mean,
when you
talk about race with the Democratic Party, and you look at Bernie and Hillary and the strides that they've both made, which both of them had to make concerning Black Lives Matter and those movements and those protests, I'm so proud. And then you listen to someone like Donald Trump say the police are mistreated and misunderstood and they're afraid
of losing
their jobs and they're afraid of losing their pensions and they're so litigious, and you go, people are being murdered by police. I don't give a shit if you're afraid of losing your job or your pension or you're scared that you're going to get public backlash. I care that you're murdering Black men in the streets, and that matters more to me than your job or your pension. So stop murdering Black men for no reason, and maybe you won't lose
unarmed.
Your job.
So,
unarmed.
Yeah, so I actually had a slightly different take on it. I think I triple facepalmed on this because he was saying that police officers are afraid to take action because they're afraid against litigation, because everyone is so litigious against the police that they just can't do anything.
Well, they keep
shooting their
guns.
He said that.
Yeah.
He said that they just can't do anything. They can't do their jobs. They can't keep the peace. And I'm like, why are they fucking shooting everybody then?
Yeah.
Like, I just couldn't handle it. I lost it a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Police are scared into inaction is why we have a national crisis of people being shot by police.
In his defense, he is parroting what these goddamn Police Benevolent Association and police union chiefs are saying.
Yeah, but it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Of course it doesn't. Of course it doesn't. Even to us white privileged people.
They're scared into an action, so they reach for their gun, and that's why they're afraid of being sued?
I know. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And if it sounds ridiculous to us, imagine if you are a person of color in a place like Ferguson, and you're watching this, and supposedly this party is courting your vote, and you're watching this, and you're just like, are you fucking kidding me?
Imagine walking around in your daily life, literally being afraid that at any moment you could be shot. Or imagine being the mother or father of a young Black person, particularly Black men, and thinking every time they leave the house, they could do nothing wrong. They could be walking with a pack of Skittles or having a conversation with a friend or maybe doing some minor crime that a white kid would get probation for.
Smoking a joint.
And your kid could get shot. You could get shot. I mean,
if a 12-year-old playing with a toy gun and you looked, big for your age.
A park. Yeah, big for your age, exactly.
Yeah.
Could get murdered. And it's
like
murder.
2 seconds
right?
is long enough to judge if he looked big.
And then you watch Donald Trump say the police are the most mistreated people in this country.
They're the real victims, yeah.
They're the victims. And I mean, it makes our blood boil. I can't imagine what it must feel like to watch that.
Yeah. But let's not get to the weeds on this. But Kasich, again, had the only reasonable thing to say, but it's the exact same thing you said before, that communities and cops work together. But again, that's very tough to stomach after we just had the Tamir Rice ruling.
Yep.
So I don't know, Kasich. It sounds good. But again, does it match up with reality? I'm not so sure.
Rubio was asked about...
I mean, he's got to sound a little sunshine and light. He, with his group, he can't go full Trump and say the police are the most amazing.
No,
most
but
mistreated.
The point
but
is, he said
he
the
also
right thing.
He said
good things.
He said the right thing, but I don't know if
did.
It matches up with reality based on recent history.
He basically talked about that he has a system in place where he had law enforcement officers and also community leaders come together and form kind of an advisory board to look at police behavior and to look at community behavior and work together. And I think that's tremendous. And I think that should be an example. And I don't have much to criticize him on that for. I think that that's something that most communities should do.
Right.
No, I mean, he did the right thing and said that there's a problem that needs to be fixed. But
is it actually working in Ohio?
Yeah.
Not in Cleveland so much, maybe.
Right. Okay, so Rubio was asked about Obama's visit to the mosques.
Oh,
and
God.
Did he say Obama knows exactly what he's doing? Don't think for a second. I'm sick of hearing that Obama does. He knows exactly what he's doing.
He didn't.
Oh, no. Cause, all right. Well, I'll give the background on this. Obama visited a mosque and said, we have to be united and get together and stop whatever. And then Rubio said, see, he's being really divisive again. And even right-wingers called bullshit on that.
Yes.
Well, and the actual question that came to him, which I thought was even-handed coming from the way that the questions had been coming to him, said, Obama visited a mosque last week. Bush visited a mosque the week after 9/11.
Visit lots of mosques.
Why is it different?
Why is Bush's visits different than Obama's visits?
And I'll give you a quote. He said, Rubio, sure, I'd visit a mosque, but the problem is that when Obama visited a mosque, the message he sent was that, quote, there is systemic racism and discrimination against Muslims in this country.
And we all
screamed at the television, yes!
Yes! Yeah,
that's exactly correct. Yes, that's right. There is. And he said, but he didn't say that people... That the Muslim faith can incite violence and that they are terrorists.
So you want the president to go to a mosque and say that?
I mean, really.
Is that what you would do?
And does he deny that there is not systemic racism and discrimination against Muslims in this country? Clearly he does.
I was internally screaming, how many times has Obama gone to a fucking church in the last 7 years?
Yeah.
And did he not say that there's been systemic Christian violence against this country? No, was he obligated to fucking say that then? No.
Well, and then that's ridiculous. And then he goes, you know, the thing is, Muslims aren't being discriminated against.
No.
They're not the ones suing. The people that are suing the U.S. government and President Obama are Christians, because they're the ones that are really being discriminated against.
They're the real victims of religious discrimination liberty. Because yes. they have to pay for contraception.
Because they are being forced.
And they can't discriminate against by gay law, people. And they have to bake giant penis cakes.
Hold on. Actually, hold on. Being forced by law to violate their conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Wait, Rach, I didn't think until this moment, but was he implicitly saying that Christian violence against America is kind of okay?
No, I don't think he was going that far. I think he's pretending that Muslim or Muslim-looking people being assaulted, which is happening every single day, isn't a real thing, but that there are 24/7 sweatshops where grandmas who used to own mom-and-pop cake shops are being forced to make disgusting penis cakes
for
gay weddings.
You don't think that in a roundabout way justifies domestic terrorism from a Christian perspective?
Oh, if you're already sympathetic to that, sure.
Yeah.
To your average American, probably not so much, but it's just as bad.
I feel like it's kind of a code language. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, or I am already biased against
It's a code language if your finger's on that trigger ready to go shoot up a Planned Parenthood or a mosque, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not really like... Yeah. Muslims
like it's not
incite
the Muslims
violence.
That are violent.
Christians are being persecuted.
And should be violent.
Dot, dot, dot. Right? Okay, so the next thing that I want to talk about real quick was, should women be drafted?
Oh, this was a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I thought this was a thinker.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone saw this coming, and everyone kind of made up their answer on the fly.
They all agree that yes.
So as
why not?
As a little background, State Department, I guess, came out and said...
The Pentagon.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you. Came out and said... since we have authorized women to be in combat, we think that women should have to register for selective service, which is basically the thing that you register, that all men that are American citizens have to register for at age 18.
I did.
Which so everyone does.
I did.
I'm
Hang
too
on.
Old now. I don't have to get drafted
And so
anymore.
If there ever is a draft, your name is in the pool. Should women have to be in that pool too? And that was the question to a lot of these men, all men, by the way, which we'll get to later. And many of them have daughters. And I thought it was an interesting question.
Yeah, I think that was a good question.
Yeah.
Not to divert the conversation too much, but I've always had a question since I was 17 and had to sign up. I always wondered what was so selective about the mandatory selective service thing.
It's selective, and if that you're Dick Cheney or Donald Trump, you get deferment so you don't have to go.
Yeah,
or in college.
I certainly understand that, but I guess so. It always struck me, not understanding the inner machinations of the military, that it was a mandatory sign up for the draft. Should the draft be reinstituted? As a 17-year-old kind of punky gothy kid, I was like, no, I'm not going to sign up for it. And they're like, well, you have to. And I'm like, well, what if I don't? And they're like, well, then you'll be in trouble. And I'm like, what kind of trouble? Because I don't give a fuck.
You won't get in trouble. In theory,
well, you can't
it
vote,
could.
First of all, that's not true.
Well, no.
That's not true.
In order to register in order to register to vote, I would have to either do or I would have to go through
conscientious objector.
And then I would have to go through a bunch of other documentation things to make sure that I was registered as a conscientious objector.
Right.
So I'm going to give you guys the...
I just always thought it was really an interesting way of phrasing it. It seems like that's definitely a Republican idea.
Well, the way...
Selective service.
Well,
when
no,
really
I mean,
no
it came to the forefront with Lyndon Johnson's Vietnam War.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I'm going to give you what they said, and then I'm going to give you a probably really unpopular opinion about this, which is my opinion. But first of all, Rubio said, sure, women should have to join this.
Well, they framed it as they should have the right to.
Well, no. Right. No. Yeah. They all said, yeah, sure, women should do it. And then they said, every single one of them, this little sexist jab, they said, only if we're not weakening the standards and codes of the Army. So,
and so if they're able to pass the test.
If they're able, now, that's not true for the Selective Service for Men. They don't check anything when you have to check the box of Selective Service. They don't check if you're a, you know, overweight or disabled.
Well, no,
disabled,
but if your draft
whatever.
Card comes up, they check all that.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that's not what they said
that's
tonight.
Not to be
they
registered
said
for the Selective Service. That's
so anyway. All of them said
no,
yes.
No, it's interesting. I didn't even catch that.
Yeah. They
yeah,
all
that's,
said
it's a really great.
We
point.
Just didn't want to weaken the military. So as long as we're not doing that, women can be in it. Bush, yes. Christie,
well,
two daughters.
Bush didn't even give it a thing. He just was like, "Fuck yeah."
America.
Well, no, he said minimum requirements. Same thing.
Did he really?
Yeah, he said yes on the draft.
Oh, yeah, that's
but
right.
Minimum
he
requirements.
Did. Yeah.
And then him and Martha Raddatz fought over draft versus registration, and that doesn't matter so much. But
no, who cares?
So Christie, yes. What I would like to say, and I think that this is unpopular, but I think it's important, is that I sort of feel like we would be in less wars. And we would be less likely to send people to war if we had only the draft.
There's a lot of people who believe
and
that.
And I say that because I think that a lot of people of color, people that are in poverty, people that don't have a lot of opportunity in their lives, join the military because that's their best option.
Sure.
And they don't have other economic opportunities. And so what we're doing when we send kids to war is we're sending the most marginalized and most oppressed kids to war. And I think it matters less to us because we don't demand that our senator's kids or our neighbor's kids or the rich guy next door's kids or the CEO's kids go. And I think that since Vietnam, we really have been in more wars because we don't have the, we don't feel a personal,
connection
to,
those rah, rah,
to the lost
support
lives.
The troops.
It's just those kids over there that decided to go, so I guess fuck them, and I'm not going to let my kid go. If we made everybody's kids go and we made it a literal draft and you say you're number 78, which was what my dad was in the Vietnam War, and he was very lucky to not have been drafted, everybody thinks about war really differently, and everyone looks at war like it could be my kid without that person's choice.
Well,
man, woman, whatever,
that,
female or male.
That also happens if your rah-rah once the war starts and then it drags on and the coffins start coming back and you realize the reality of it, then people...
Yeah, but I don't think that's happened in these last two wars. I think
definitely
the coffins
has.
Have been coming back. I mean,
no,
to
it
Rachel Maddow's point,
that,
I don't think so. I mean,
that's why Obama was able to really slam Hillary with her Iraq war.
But how many anti-war protests... As compared to Vietnam, do you see with Iraq and Afghanistan?
There were a bunch. You missed them. There were a bunch in the early part of the Bush administration, 2003, 2004,
when
things started getting there.
Your
was
your little
plenty
brother
of protests.
And your boyfriend and your husband and your kid are getting drafted, and you have no choice.
That was different.
Those protests don't stop.
No, oh
and
yeah,
and people
yeah.
go fucking crazy.
Sure, and they
and
camp
those
out
wars
on the steps of the Capitol,
stop.
And Nixon has to
and
come
those
talk
wars
to them, yeah.
stop.
Yeah.
This war is entirely
didn't
voluntary.
Stop until it was lost, and I have to actually stop you because I vehemently and kind of angrily disagree with you on this point.
Well, don't be angry, but let's just have a civil conversation.
You think that rather than a military class of people who voluntarily decide to be a military class, you want the fucking Hunger Games? You want people to be drafted in because you think there will be less war?
Yes.
Okay. You think that if somebody's mother... No, you and I can take this offline if we need to, but I think that what you just said was terrible.
It is terrible.
War. What you just said was fucking terrible. You think that if somebody's son, husband, and brother get drafted into a war and they're left alone, well, and shit, we're going to put women in here now because they're in Selective Service. So
yes, everybody.
A family of five all gets drafted into a war because they're all within the range. They all get fucking murdered. Nothing happens. At home, there's this giant fucking hole left. You think that that is the appropriate way to say that there should be no more war? Because we can poke at the hole and say, like, look how horrible war is?
No, I think her point...
That's not why.
I think her point was, with the specter of that...
With the idea that that could even possibly happen, there would not even be the potential for war, like... Iraq, like Afghanistan, like Vietnam.
I hear your point, and everyone hears your point. What is not going to happen is the specter of that being a possibility. That's not going to happen, and that has not proven itself to happen in millennia of human history. What it has shown is that when people get into wars like that, people get into fucking Hatfield and McCoy fucking battles about how I'm never going to fucking give up on the Iranian people, about how they murdered my entire fucking family. I'm going to go and fight against them for my entire life because they destroyed my entire fucking family. And now we have entire nation states fighting against one another because of giant holes that were left in other families or other nations. I don't know. This is a terrible idea. This is terrible.
This is a spirited debate as the one we just watched.
All right.
I like it.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is that making it mandatory... So let's look at Israel, for example. In Israel, every person...
Yeah, and they're doing so good on the fucking not being in perpetual war front.
I would like you to let me finish.
Okay. Just know that I'm going to say that exact sentence again when you're done saying the thing that you're about to say.
So Israel, for example, makes every person, right, go into the military. They have to serve for, I think it's 4 years, I'm not exactly sure. I can check my notes on
that. It's compulsory, yeah.
Yeah, it's compulsory for every person, mm-hmm. right?
And they're very hot.
They are, actually. And I think that what it does is it unites the country in a way of saying every person is required to be in the military for a time. And if every person in the country, sort of to Rachel Maddow's book, her point that we are so disconnected from the wars that we're in now, you know, there used to be rationing and there used to be the draft and there used to be this sense of the American people were in the war too and they were connected to it.
Yeah.
I think that we are so disconnected from the wars that we're in currently that we just let them languish on for 10, 12 years
in a way that
I don't think would exist or happen if it was possible that anybody's kid, anybody's brother, anybody's boyfriend, anybody's husband, anybody's girlfriend could be swept up in it. I think that the American people would stand up to their government, much in the same way that Vietnam happened, and say, fuck this, no more, I'm marching, I'm doing whatever I have to do, we will not stand for this anymore.
But his point, Vietnam dragged on till 1975.
Not as long as the war that we're in now, correct?
True.
Well,
okay.
But there were much less casualties in this war, and that could be because of the technology or...
Lots of reasons.
And yeah, I actually think that you're very much onto something, that it will tie people much more into the war.
Yes.
But I'm not going to back off on the how is the perpetual war front been going for Israel.
Well, Israel's in a very different situation than Ren, which is, I think, why
because of compulsory military.
No, I don't think so at all. It's because they're surrounded by people who hate them.
Obviously, it's much more
we
nuanced.
Are not Israel. You know that.
It's obviously
don't do
much
that.
More nuanced
you know.
Than that. But if you want to use them as an example of how we're going to get out of a perpetual war state, I would suggest that you rethink your position.
I'm not using them as an example of how we'll get out of a perpetual war state because they are surrounded by people who hate them because they've put themselves in a ridiculous situation of caring more about a silly... This is me being an atheist. I'm sorry. I like Israel or whatever. But, like, it's ridiculous to me that...
Oh, it's more than that. We can get into the settlers and Netanyahu's foreign policy.
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd.
I'm gonna put the kibosh on this right now.
Right.
Good
spirit.
Go have a good... Sorry. Fucking breakup fight later. for now.
We're fine.
Good spirited debate on that, and that's another topic we can do a whole hour on. So let's wrap it up here.
We had a better debate than the Republicans.
We did. ours was much more substantive and smarter, that's for sure.
All right.
Are we getting to the thing Rubio said that we all actually agreed with?
Okay.
Oh yeah, let's end on that. That's going to be a heart warmer.
Let's see. Which one? I have like seven. With social issues is what I have.
So well,
I have,
you go ahead, Rach.
I have Rubio was asked, young people are split, which is, this is a total
bullshit.
Oh, no,
that was
thing.
The ham and cheese lady.
Yeah, that's the ham and cheese lady.
Susie Ham and Cheese.
Susie Ham and Cheese, I don't like her very much. About young people like same-sex marriage, but
they hate abortion.
Overwhelmingly don't.
And
support
I'm like,
abortion, which
what
is totally
young
not
people
true.
Are you talking
totally
to?
Totally not. Like, she's like 78%, and I'm like, bullshit.
No, that made no
bullshit.
Sense.
At your church youth group lately?
Right?
I mean, who are you talking to?
Also, pro-lifers? Less, I don't know.
Who's less likely to have abortions than homosexuals?
Exactly. I mean, thanks, Church Carlin. Okay, so we had that. He sort of just said the same things, which is he's awful.
Wait, who's he?
Rubio.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, I believe in one man, one woman. It's an institutional cornerstone of society.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Just as a personal note, I'd like to say that they have turned the man and woman thing to one man, one woman thing, which
right,
means
right,
they,
right, right.
I'm winning.
Yeah, more on
well,
that
Well, he
later.
Said marriage, though.
True.
Yeah, well, we're going to get past that, too, eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
eventually.
Why does it need to be two people in a marriage? Anyway. Bush, blah, blah, blah. I'm too pro-life. I'm the most pro-life because...
I'm the most pro-lifest ever because I had license plates in Florida.
License plates that...
that said choose life.
Paid for crisis pregnancy centers and made people notify the parents of abortion. Like,
he was awful. I was living there then.
I wanted to literally throw up all over myself.
I didn't know about that till tonight.
I was living there then and I hated it then and so did so many other people.
And
he
does
gross.
Support exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. Rubio, does
only,
not.
Only life
he
of the mother.
He only life of the mother because he is pro, quote, life.
Rape and incest, then
rape
you're,
and incest,
then
totally
you're an incubator.
Fine. Just be an incubator for your rape baby. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, even if you're 12.
Yeah. Christy, I defunded Planned Parenthood for the last 6 years.
Which is a lie.
He doesn't like the, quote, systematic murder of children in the womb and the sale of baby parts.
Right, so he's still drumming on that thing that was totally blown up and those people got arrested, not Planned Parenthood. But,
yeah.
Again, they'll just keep milking it for all it's worth because I'm sure his audience doesn't believe that anymore.
And he is for rape and incest
exceptions.
He didn't mention life of the mother, but I'm
sure. He's not for rape and incest, so the exceptions were
I said there. Exceptions, if you didn't hear.
Isn't that crazy that we have to, like, you know, are you for an exception for rape and incest and the life of the mother, and it's like we're still having this debate in
it's
the year 2016
to me that we're even having the debate about whether or not abortion should be legal, much less whether or not if I get raped and impregnated by my rapist I should be
who's
an incubator for the rapist's child. I don't even know what to say.
Well, it
to
depends
that.
On whether or not it's a legitimate rape, honey.
Right, because my body can just take care of that whole thing. Right,
Todd Aiken? Your body has ways of
shutting that
whole show
thing
down.
Yeah, shutting it down. Thanks, Todd Aiken. Yeah, I mean, it's an absurdity.
But then,
I will say, it's great that...
Somebody finally asked this fucking question.
Somebody finally asked about it, and that's what you were getting at.
And
Rubio
actually
yes.
said, why on the Democratic side are they not asking this question? And we
yep.
said, yes!
Yes!
Because
why?
You
Good
heard,
question.
If you heard the last podcast, I ranted about it for 20 minutes straight.
Yes.
Yep.
But then, of course, he followed up with saying horrible things, that
yes.
Democrats are horrible extremists.
Correct.
They're
like,
everything he said was repugnant.
And he's like,
he's
the reason they don't want to talk about it is because they want to, they're the most extreme version of wanting abortions and thinking that it's great, and you're just like,
well,
I don't
and
even know.
They're the
what.
Real extremists on this side of the debate, and really, I mean, painting the other side in a way that was, to my surprise, so much applause.
Yeah,
I was really hoping that somebody, yeah, it would just be kind of one of those.
Well,
like,
they each have their
things,
own supporters
everyone,
in the room, and they're going to
yeah.
clap for whatever.
Yeah.
I was just
Who
really
cares?
Surprised when he's like, "How come nobody's asking them these questions?" It was raucous applause because he wants to expose them as the real people who really fuck up or really, you know.
Oh, and you know what? I'm sure Hillary and Bernie would love to talk about this. They're not being
right.
asked
well,
by the damn moderator.
Well, and the thing that
talk
he,
about
he said in the middle of his, you know, word salad thing about it that I, you know, if we're going to do little. Mini episodes about particular issues, I'd really like to talk about what is and is not allowable under federal and state different laws from an abortion perspective.
Oh, yeah, because Chris Christie claimed that Chris Clinton was for partial birth abortions, which
well,
she's
so,
not.
So partial birth,
and then I think it was Cruz that said to the due date.
To the, let me look at my notes.
One of them said it was okay. It was Cruz.
It was either Cruz or
Christie. One of the two of them.
This was a fact-checking bonanza. I mean, these guys bullshit forever, but there was a cornucopia tonight.
I mean, when we're talking about partial birth abortion, I want to really talk about what we're talking about when we talk about partial birth abortion.
Well,
and late term and
we'll
and
get to that
term.
In another
like,
episode.
I'd really like to do an episode about what the difference
but I hope to God
are.
Some so Democratic future moderators saw Rubio say that and were like, oh yeah, we haven't.
Oh, and also everybody agrees with us. Contrary to what Martha Plimpton or whatever said, like they all
Martha Plimpton.
I actually love her. She's an actress, but that lady reminds me of her.
Susie Hamm and Martha Raddatz
said
or it was.
About most people.
It was Raddatz, I think.
No, it was the awful young thing. I hate her. I'm sorry. She's awful.
Hamm
and Cheese said.
Jessica Hamm on Rye.
Yeah. Said like 78% of young people don't like abortions. And I'm like, what the fuck planet are you living on? That is not true in any realm of possibility.
Yeah, it's way
in
too late
reality,
to mention this, but her questions were super biased.
She was awful. But in reality, if you ask Democrats that question and if you ask Republicans that question and then you poll the American people, we are overwhelmingly
This is not good for them.
Overwhelmingly preferred.
And Rince Priebus knows this, and he's probably saying, shut up,
so
shut
why
up.
The fuck? Because it's Debbie Wasserman? We just don't want to talk about the things that are really popular about our party?
I don't know.
Let's gloss over the things that everyone agrees with us on and that the Republicans
that.
Disagree with us
I just
on?
Think
what the fuck?
I just think the Democratic moderators have mostly sucked.
Well, what about Maddow?
They didn't get to it, maybe. They should have brought
it's
it up.
Bullshit.
To be honest,
my opinion is
that there's no meat on it because there's no daylight between them. And so there's
sure.
No.
I don't care.
Sure.
It's a public national debate with a bunch of people watching from both sides of the aisle.
But it doesn't lead.
I don't care.
There's no
because we
there's
have
no daylight between them.
I don't care. Talk about it anyway. Talk about what they're saying. You know, we talk. The Republicans talk all the time about issues that they agree on, but we don't. And they hit Hillary and they hit Bernie.
Yep.
And we don't do the same thing, and it's fucking stupid.
And on women's reproductive rights, it's ridiculous,
exactly. It's ridiculous.
That we're not talking about it
in
the debates.
News, there's been shootings. There's been defundings. There's been all this bullshit. And we're not talking about it. And if we did, we can make daylight at least between and start to bring up the issue that we are very, very different.
Yeah.
Even if we're the same with each other, let's talk about what they're saying.
Well,
I hope Hillary and Bernie jump on this tonight. And even if the moderators don't say it, that they just say, you know what, we're talking about this right now.
I actually anticipate that they will because
they've
so far, everything that, and almost shamefully so, the questions in the debates all across the board have been about the horse race with pitting one another against one another and saying, like, this guy said this about
you.
How do you respond?
Also ISIS.
And blah, blah, blah.
And
also ISIS. How would you be different than one another? And, like, they're constantly pitting one another against one another. Now that one against one on the Democratic side, I think they're going to have to start putting daylight between the two of them, and they're going to have to say, like, where do you agree and where do you not? And I'm seeing it in a lot of the things online where they say, you know, what are the actual differences between the two? Some of them are really mean against Hillary memes that are somewhat funny, admittedly.
Super sexist and gross.
The ones against Bernie are kind of fun. Well, there's not really against Bernie.
There's quite a few against Bernie.
They all
Bernie.
Suck.
They're,
stop, you Hillary
stop
Bernie
it,
people.
Stop it, everybody.
Yes, stop
for
it.
For real. Some just you can like one more than the other. Stop painting the other as like a horrible nightmare person because they're not.
This is a great time to pivot to that really quick before we go. So Travis wrote a really important article for Daily Kos about this exact issue. So we talked about, Travis talked about the Democratic debate.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the Republican debate tonight. And here's the takedown. There's no way that if you're listening to this, unless you like torture, that you want a Republican to be elected. So whether you're a Bernie supporter or a Hillary supporter, whether you love her and hate him or hate him and love her, I don't care. But there's no way that after watching this debate or listening to us talk about it, that you think any of these jokers are going to be a better president than Bernie or Hillary.
Or equal.
Or equal.
Somehow.
Can I slightly rephrase that and say that after watching this, there's no way that you can hate either of the side on our part. Correct. On our side.
You can think one takes too much money from Wall Street, or socialism's a bad idea, or one's not experienced.
One's going to take 20 years, or, and the other one will
one
make.
One you think is a little mendacious, whatever. This is fucking...
There's no way you hate Hillary or hate Bernie.
This is apples and rotting horse flesh.
Yes, okay. Exactly. I mean, it's not even a contest. So whether you hate or love one or the other of the Democratic candidates, let's try to be civil. Let's remember that what we're fighting against is not really each other, but we're fighting against Republican craziness and right-wing... you know, American Taliban, Sharia law of the Christian kind.
If you're a Bernie supporter, and the next time you want to say, you are for the establishment and corporate shill in Wall Street, think about this person you're talking to and ask yourself what you guys both think about gay rights, about reproductive rights, about equal pay for women, about war, about torture, about criminal justice reform, and then think, is this person really my enemy that I'm trying to butt heads with?
Right.
If you're a Hillary supporter and you're going... Oh, Bernie has no right to have a litmus test on what progressivism is, and he's a socialist, and socialism is bad, and
he can never win in a general.
And he's too old, and he's too for the gun lobby. Ask yourself the same questions and cut it out.
Yep.
We're unified in a fight here, and you can prefer one candidate over the other, and that's fine. But what we're up against here, the infighting is just so ridiculous.
It is.
So
it's getting ugly.
Yeah.
Idiotic.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Stop. Really.
All right.
And on that note, we're going to stop.
Yes.
Yes.
Because we've been droning on for over 90 minutes here. But what do we got coming up? We got Tuesday. We're gonna try to secure a webcam that doesn't suck and do a live stream again. Are we going to do that or not?
For New Hampshire primary?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that, or we'll do a podcast. But we'll definitely cover it for you guys.
I want to try to do the live thing, so we'll see if we can do that. Maybe we'll do it with the shitty webcam again. Just what the hell?
Or we can dual record just in case the recording's not great. We'll figure something out.
I can still extract the audio from those, but I never got around to it. But I might still.
And then we have some kind of topical things coming up. We're going to try to do
like
one
ointments?
That's like, yeah, like ointments. We're going to try to do one that's kind of everything else that's been going on that's not debate related. And then we're going to do one on solitary confinement.
I'm going to do one
on Shkreli. One on the Flint water crisis. And I guess we're going to
do one on heroin.
Heroin and abortion.
So we got a lot of those coming up. We'll each do...
You still have a Supreme Court one coming up, right?
Yeah, I have to get in touch with our special guest.
Rachel and
that,
or Dana may just record a solo one at some point, like I do.
We will figure it out. But there's a lot coming up. Again, if you guys want to know things or have questions, we had a listener email want to know specifically about the Affordable Care Act and kind of
the genesis of that.
So Sally, shout out to you. We are going to get to that on our next podcast.
It's on my action item list. I've been tasked with that one.
Yeah.
So and Arliss Bunny will be joining us after the next Democratic debate.
Yeah.
Whenever the hell that is.
Right, which I don't even know.
I don't even know.
We'll figure it out. But anyway... Yeah, so if you guys want to know anything or have questions or want something specifically covered in depth or just briefly, just email us at irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. Or if you want to tweet, it's @irreverentduo. That's how to get a hold of us.
Yeah, the email's up on the site now, so if you don't know how to spell it, you can copy and paste it.
Yeah.
Okay, as usual, stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and we will see you Tuesday. Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.